You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Around the Block. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings, bringing you some of the latest information and practices as it pertains to federal prison consulting. So, boy, do we have a lot. A lot of stuff is going on.
It has been really busy the last 30 days.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So we'll just jump right in.
Jump right in, Susan.
So, lots of really interesting stuff. For those of you who may or may not have seen it, Todd Chrisley has a podcast, and he interviewed, and it was posted this month, interviews with both Rick Stover, who is the special assistant to the director, heading up FSA for the agency.
Well, explain who Todd Chrisley is, because people might not know.
Yeah. Okay, so Todd Chrisley was in the media, had his public thing going on, and got himself in, caught up with some stuff, ended up going to federal prison, was at Pensacola, received a pardon, and is now back home. And he has become very actively advocating for individuals in custody. I think he kind of first started out really he advocates across the board, but I think the men at Pensacola were obviously near and dear to his heart. And he has become a very vocal advocate for them, and has the ear of the director. And so both Rick Stover, as I said, special assistant to the director, and Director Marshall have done two different podcasts. excuse me. Rick's focused mostly on, almost exclusively on FSA and some of the things that are going on. The directors got into some other topics, and I think both are well worth the listen to, so please do. Had some notes on obviously the FSA stuff. I might have worded things a little different than Mr. Stover did in describing some of the things. But one of the really interesting things that he talked about, and obviously this was only a couple of weeks ago, and he said it was coming, so hopefully we will see this in the coming days and weeks, is just like the task force that was created, and this was really just an efficient use of resources. He talks about manpower resources specifically. In his interview, he talks about kind of the workload of the reentry offices. And for folks that don't know, the Bureau has 22 reentry offices. You should think of them as like mini regions. And depending on the area, the state where they're at, they may have multiple states. They may have multiple districts within a single state. They may only have one state. Just depends on the number of the population and the number of halfway houses in a given area. So he talked about their manpower and their ability to kind of go back and revisit cases that they've already either given a designation date to, or have them slotted in for home confinement. And of course, in July, the Bureau changed how they were approaching home confinement. So they established the task force to just direct some manpower to calculate those numbers. And they started out with focusing on the folks in halfway houses right now, and to see where their home confinement dates advanced to. They distributed that information out to the reentry offices. We've been seeing lots of people move to home confinement. And that was something that both Rick and Todd talked about. And we have been seeing it as well. And the next step is to take that same task force, run those same reports, identify those individuals who have a halfway house date, who may or may not qualify for home confinement, but could get a home confinement date that's sooner. And that goes back to that kind of shift in how home confinement eligibility dates were established. And that's something that, you know, you and I do as well, because we're not waiting, obviously, until the Bureau is able to do it for the agency as a whole. So that was interesting. I was trying to look at my notes. A couple of things just to clarify. One of the things I noticed was Rick talked about being able to earn up to 15 days. Want to make sure it's real clear for our audience. You can earn 10 days or 15 days. That's it. There is no
nothing in between.
Yeah, there's nothing in between. So unlike 3621E, where someone can earn up to 12 months off their sentence, which means they can earn less, when you're earning time credits, it's either 10 days or 15 days. That was one little thing I noticed. And then kind of just, there was another point, and they were talking about the halfway house and the 12 months and home confinement and the 180 days or 10%. And I just thought it was real important that we kind of just share with our audience, make sure everybody's, you know, on the same page. Statutorily, with the Second Chance Act, home confinement is limited, is restricted to 10% or 180 days, whichever is less. And of course, the big change that happened in June, the big directive change was accepting that the home, that conditional release date, the conditional placement date, we're going to use that for all planning purposes, not just as case managers have been doing since we rolled it out, the Bureau rolled out conditional release dates in October of 2023, where now they said, okay, we know what your release date's going to be. So let's plan when we're going to do your halfway house paperwork. And then last year, they just about this time last year, they rolled out the conditional placement date. Again, another huge tool for case managers to say, okay, now I know where you're going to fall for halfway house as far as your FSA time. I can plan accordingly, right, in terms of paperwork. And then, of course, the next evolution was the home confinement date. And that was taking the statutory number of days a person has for eligibility, 10% or 180 days, whichever is less, and now attaching it to that conditional date, that maximum benefit date. So if you can go to home, you can leave on pre-release placement based on your conditional date. Sorry, I got a little tickle going on in my throat. You know, in March of 2027, and you've got a full year of FSA and halfway house, we're not attaching your home confinement date to your release date, which is 2028, and saying, oh, well, your halfway house is going to be September of 2026 when you're going to be in halfway house by March. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? So they're stacking, and that's what goes back to that June 17th memo, and we've talked about it a couple different times, several times, is they're now applying those authorities, FSA and SCA, cumulatively and in sequence to include home confinement. Huge change. And like I said, we were talking about it when I was still employed about, could we do it? I think this administration has been more supportive, and the director talks about kind of the support he has been getting from this administration that wasn't there in the last administration. So
now,
was a win-win for everybody.
Now we're talking about once the five-factor review's been done?
Right. So what they're looking at is two things. So the five-factor review is part of that designation authority of the Bureau. And how does the Bureau make designation decisions? Characteristics of the individual, characteristics of the offense, resources available, et cetera, right? That five factors are the same five factors the Bureau uses, the Bureau's authority in designating an individual to an institution. When Congress passed the Second Chance Act, they said, okay, Bureau, You got to use those same measures when you're considering halfway house placement. You can't just say, oh, he's a penitentiary inmate, he doesn't get anything. You got to consider more than his security level. You've got to include those reentry needs. So it was really, really a huge monumental change when that passed in 2007. Now, what the Bureau is doing, and this was outlined in that June 17th memo, is they're separating that needs-based placement to go to a residential halfway house program and direct home confinement. So they're saying now is, if you don't have the support, you're going back to your spouse, to your partner, to the home you lived in before you went into prison. You've got a shorter sentence. You haven't been out of the community for years. You know, you're going back. Maybe you even are going back to the job you had before because they've left it open for you, right? You're in good shape relative to other folks in custody. They're allowing that direct home confinement. That was the standard before FSA. You almost never sent someone from a camp to halfway house unless they needed a bed to sleep in. They were routinely sent to direct home confinement. FSA kind of messed up in terms of figuring out what that date was. So in terms of what date were we working with? And that's why we saw individuals not getting to maximize their full home confinement, because literally we were sitting there, and Bruce, you and I did it. We would figure out, like, okay, what date can they go to home confinement? And it's okay, every 30 days. Well, here's 15, here's 15. Okay, this date's moving as well. And when is that magic date? Well, now they've thrown out that, which is great, because it was a pain in the neck to try to figure out. We had to do it by hand to make sure it was right. Now they are saying, okay, we know what the conditional release date's going to be. And we know the number of days of eligibility because it's a simple math formula.
Yeah, right.
So just calculate it and apply
eligibility
it.
Of home confinement.
Or home confinement.
There you go.
For home confinement. Now, what's the next evolution that they need to do? Because the Bureau is across the board, and we'll discuss the latest announcement that just was posted here a couple days ago. Because they're full on embracing the idea that you're earning, you're going to keep earning. We're going to make our decisions based on this new date. Now, you screw up, well, we're going to claw everything back. But if you don't, we're just going to function as if this is going to be your final end date. The next thing they need to do is they need to calculate the conditional release date from the very beginning, when we assume the first earning part of 10 days, and then we move to 15 days. Because again, it's a simple calculation. Individuals with more than 12 months remaining to serve, when they walk in the door, they have 208 days because they've got two assessments. They'll get their first one at 28 days and the second one at 180 days. For those less than a year, they're getting the first one at 28 days and the second one is 90 days later. That means at either 118 or 210 days, or 200, I'm sorry, 208 days, they become eligible for the 15 days. That, again, is a simple math formula. They would have to change the conditional calculator.
Right.
I don't think this is going to happen immediately, because they're trying to get
two separate earning statuses to code into.
They have to now code in, because right now, what the conditional calculators do is they take it as a snapshot. So if you are on the front end of your sentence and you are earning 10 days, the conditional calculator assumes 10 days for the entire term of incarceration.
It's not totally accurate, right?
As opposed to just going, okay, your minimum security or minimum risk level you're earning. Okay, great. This is your ADES date. This is when you walked in the door. 118 days later, 208 days later, you go to 15, two more days after that, you're earning your first 15 days. And we're going to just math it out. It's a little bit more complex formula.
You know, if I was writing the program, I'd just say, have this program, base it on 15 days minus 30, right? Because that's the first six.
Or four. It could be four.
Four, yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So, again, there's, and let's take one more thing. For our four individuals that are walking the door at medium or high risk, they are earning 10 days. And until they go drop to minimum or low, they can't even apply the credit they have. And then once it's available, they have to still wait for two consecutive assessments, which, depending on when in their sentence they drop to minimum or low risk, could be 6 months, could be 9 months, could be 12 months.
Well, now,
so there is, it's not
right.
Impossible. It's just not simple. And given their focus right now is getting all of these guys with the home confinement and looking at, as Mr. Stover indicated, they want to start looking at individuals in the institutions that already have designation dates and seeing where those can be advanced or moved to home confinement, changed to home confinement, et cetera. They're focused on that. So just like everything else that has been done, as the tools have evolved, they are prioritizing. You know, initially we prioritized folks that were releasing. That was our goal. We had to prioritize that, reasonably so. Then after that, it was prioritizing getting that conditional release date, then adding these tools. And so as it evolves, short of the law changing and simplifying, which you and I have talked about, the fact that the law itself is not written well in terms of a simple implementation,
right,
they are going to have to stage these developments. You know, the Bureau is not some big private company with a huge IT department that can sit there and code and just exclusively work on this while still doing all their other responsibilities. That's just not how it is. Now, if Elon wants to come hang out and get all that coding done and speed it up, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. But they are staging that stuff. So
do any of these new, so if you're sitting in a medium, do these new changes in terms of case management or rosters or computation, nothing can really happen anyway until they get to,
they've got to risk down? Get to that lower minimum risk level. The information's accumulating, but none of it can be considered, none of it can be applied until they drop, or they apply for an exception to the warden. And once they apply, if they're approved, then they are treated as if they are low risk, and then they get all of the bells and whistles with that.
Okay.
So now, couple of new things that have also come out. Like I said, it's been a busy month for the Bureau. A few weeks back now, I guess it was probably last month, we posted on the Facebook page the link to the slideshow that talked about Halfway House, and it had a lot of definitions in there, a lot of information related to the Second Chance Act, First Step Back, home confinement, etc. A lot of good stuff in that. The week before,
because you were out. Yep.
They posted a brand new video, not a slideshow, but an actual like training video. And in fact, before I continue, they have moved some of the information. So now when someone goes to the, Federal Bureau of Prisons, Bureau of Prisons.gov website, and they click on the drop-down menu, there's a tab for inmates, and they drop down, they will see an FSA link on that inmate tab. They click on that, takes them to the FSA resource page. Yes, there are other ways to get to this, but when you're thinking about your loved one, that's the tab you're going to. So click on that, takes you to the FSA page, go to the box that's labeled resource materials or resource related resources or some resources in the title. Don't remember at the minute. Click on that, go down to the very bottom. There's a whole bunch of policy statements and all kinds of good stuff for, you know, if you're bored and need to read a lot. They do not have links to our book though. It's a subscription. You'd think they would, but that's okay. That's okay. They don't have links to our book, but that's okay.
Right.
You go to the bottom and there is three documents there right now. One of them is the slideshow. One is the brand new video. What is the brand new video? I am so excited because I had been talking about this before I retired, right? I was one of the individuals that was developing the training. I was the individual developing the training for correctional programs. Yeah. And some of the specialists in the branch were doing teaching, but so was I. And as all these tools kept getting added on, the actual training session was getting longer and longer. By the time I retired, we were up to a solid 3 hours of content. And that was like no time for questions. That was just me talking for three straight hours, which I am a talker, but even that is like pushing the limits of my bandwidth. And that was no questions. If people asked questions, you know, and of course there's a ton of questions, right? And these were the case managers and the case management coordinators. People want to ask the question is why, right? Why don't case managers know this better, right? Well, COVID happened and we stopped in-person training. And then shortly after I retired, due to the funding issues that we saw in 2024, the budget issues, which continue as the government continues in a shutdown, they stopped again. They suspended in-person training because of just the amount of money just to fly a group of students out to the training center in Colorado and, you know, sleep in a hotel room while they're going to class for a week gets expensive. So they've suspended training. So the only training that's been coming out is memos and meetings and things like that. And a virtual training is nice, but when you're talking about something with the complexity of FSA, you want to be able to look at it more than one time and go through it more than one time. And so I have been advocating, like, we need to start like creating videos, breaking this stuff up into modules, you know? So to see this video come to being, you know, it would have been nice to have it sooner, but I'm glad it's here now. It goes through how the calculation works. And for those of you who have our book, we talk about the same thing. You won't see an exact timeline, but you will see a very similar timeline as what we do in the book. But the one caveat, and I did, we passed it on when it came out about a week ago, a little over a week ago, we passed it on to say that we identified an error in it. And, you know, it was created by folks who are not program specialists, but are training developers. And they were posting it, creating it with their knowledge and understanding and such. So there is a small error in it. But otherwise, the actual method of calculation, explaining the calculation, is outstanding. And I would encourage everybody.
And you told the people in D.C. about the error, right?
Yes, I passed it on.
I remember you doing it. Okay.
And it has been passed on. Now, how quickly, because I'm not a develop a video person, how quickly it will be get fixed. It is a very small error to the tune of 5 days. and essentially what they did was they talk about like for those first two assessment periods that where you're earning 10 days a month, or in the case of a shorter sentence, those first two assessments, you're still earning 10 days a month. On the slideshow or on the video, it talks about the individual earning 10 days for the first 7 months. That's not what happens. The reason is, so your first assessment period is 28 days. That's not 30. So you don't earn anything in those first 28 days. You have to get to day 30. And that's your first 10 days. Well, your second assessment, and we'll just talk about the 180 days, is exactly 180 days later. It is independent of the physical in-person team that case managers do with the guys in population, right? This is a computer-generated timeline that is exact, right? So if we take 28 and 180, we get 280 days. After your 280th day, you are now eligible for 15 days. Except those aren't, that 208 days is not 30, a complete 30-day interval, right? You've got six 30-day intervals and one 28-day interval. You have to go two more days to your 210th day, but you're earning 15 days now. So when you're looking at your time credit worksheet, or you know, whether your family members have sent them home, or for folks sitting in halfway house, you know, when you're looking at that time credit worksheet, what you see is, here's these 208 days, and you have only earned 60 days because there were six complete 30-day increments. And then you go to the next band, right? The next earning band, where you're at the 15-day rate, and it says carryover days, 28 days. Those are the 28 days. So when you hit 210 days, you haven't earned 70 days. You have earned 75 days. And that's where the error is. So they show folks earning 70 days and then earning the 15 days, when in fact you earn 75. 60 days and the 28 days carries over to the seventh period, which is at the 15-day rate.
Right.
Minor error. Again, going back to the complexity of the statute itself, but it's in everyone's favor, because whatever they calculate out, it's actually 5 days. The release is 5 days sooner. So, but it goes through examples at 24 months, 60 months, 120 months, does an RDAP example, talks about good conduct time. Just very, very good. Very easy to understand. It's only about 11 to 12 minutes. So you can watch it repetitively to get it like absorbed into your soul. And it is available for staff as well, because it's publicly available.
And we'll put it back out on the Facebook link.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, like if I could have convinced someone to do this, I tried. But, you know, the new director in selecting Rick Stover to be his special assistant, they have elevated all FSA stuff to the director's office rather than what was being done while I was still there under the previous director. Was you had computer services doing one stuff that was in one division. You had correctional programs, my division, doing stuff. You had the reentry division doing their thing. And, you know, you had all of these, some stovepipes of information. Sometimes things there was, when I was still working, I worked really hard on the communication. But sometimes when someone's boss, your boss or someone else's boss, is saying, we got to go, we got to get this out. Sometimes things were rolled out and made available before we were fully able to explain what was happening to the staff. Ideally, in a perfect world, we would have this functionality. It would be tested. It would be beautiful. It would work. Always important. It would work. And then we would brief the staff and then brief the population and then hit the button and have it work. That's in a perfect world. Having spent 33 years in government, there is rarely a perfect world in government. That's right. I'm sure you saw the same thing on your side of the house. Some things don't change. So very, very outstanding resource. We're going to repost them up on the Facebook group, but if you haven't seen them, they are available. They're publicly available. I'm really thrilled to see that. And I'd love to see some expansion, some additional things, whether they're for public consumption at a minimum for case managers. But I think, I would like to see a similar video explaining stacking, because I think people are still struggling to understand how that's supposed to work, both on the case manager side and for the public side. You and I spend a lot of times kind of explaining
and the
relationship between FSA and SCA.
Right. And so certainly a person's release date is their release date. Make no mistake about it. But some of these other conditional dates or eligibility dates aren't hard dates that you're going to get X or Y on that date. Right.
Right. So right.
You got clients, sad to say, they're past their home confinement eligibility date. But yet it took a while for a bed to clear or the RRC staff to perform a home inspection, which then that gets transmitted back up to the RRM to sign. You know, these things just and time is just clicking.
Depending on how much time they were in the halfway house, you know, because we are in this transitional period. So depending on how much time they were in the halfway house, they may have gotten, you know, if they've been in long enough that they were getting passes, weekend passes, the home plan was reviewed, because you don't get your weekend passes.
Right.
Unless they've done the home inspection. So if you were in the halfway house long enough that you got that, well, then this new thing happening, but for other people, they weren't in the halfway house long enough. This new thing rolls out. They're getting the information, you know, the reentry offices depend on the RRC staff. You know, your reentry office isn't necessarily located locally to where the halfway house is, obviously. So they're depending on the contract staff, the RRC staff, to, you know, be their eyes and ears, and they've got to go do it. And then they've got to send a report back, and, you know, and not everyone appreciates the fact that you've got guys sitting there and gals sitting there that want to go home.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they got out of the institution. We hear it all the time. Halfway house is not necessarily the best. Some halfway houses are better than others. We have some staff that their halfway house staff is very responsive and is doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And we have other halfway houses that we'll just leave it aren't. They're not, you know, and again, the reentry offices, the bureau staff, you know, they've got this large geographical area. Your old office covered all of North Texas, Louisiana, and part of Oklahoma, or all of Oklahoma?
All of it.
Yeah. So,
all,
I mean, that's
all of New Mexico.
A large geographical area then.
Right. And so your RM has the specialists, and there's several specialists that work under the regional residential reentry managers that focus on their respective halfway houses in their respective geographical part of the region. And so it's still that bureaucracy is still there, but information.
The reentry offices also don't have case management staff. If I could wave my magic wand, I would have a case manager, an institution trained case manager, same as, you know, same type, same background and such. But in every single reentry office, you know.
Now, luckily, I'm going to say this categorically, but luckily, there's somebody in those offices. There's usually multiple people in those offices that are either specialists or the RRM themselves, that person was indeed a case manager.
Right, right. They have the background.
Yeah.
But what I would like to see is a designated person that can answer these FSA questions, can answer these can look at these things.
Because federal contract, man. They can outsource it to us.
There you go. But I think they need those people that their sole function is checking this information, looking up in the database, you know, what is, you know, has this conditional release date. We have a client whose conditional release date just changed because she went from 10 days to 15 days, and which changed all of her dates. You know, so having someone whose dedicated focus is FSA frees up CTS folks to do their thing, the causes to do their thing, the reentry manager to do their thing. From my perspective, this FSA has put a significant burden, because now instead of supervising folks for 3 months, 6 months, maybe 9 months, handful of people, maybe out as much as a year, they have got folks that are on their books that they still have to check in with and monitor and everything for 2 and 3 years. We looked at a case today, 3 years of FSA pre-release time, just short of 3 years, 35 months of FSA
earned
conditional, based on his conditional date. Right. But that's a lot of time for an office to be managing folks that it wasn't designed for.
Right.
And I think this is another structural change that has to happen with the Bureau, because FSA has turned pre-release placement into community-based incarceration.
You know, and
COVID, that is a totally different model.
And COVID and set the path for that, you know.
Absolutely. So, and it worked, but it was a strain on those offices. They were not designed to do that. They don't have the manpower.
People.
They don't. It's just not the model that was designed for.
Not at all.
So, but like I said, we're seeing really good things. I was just watching the time, make sure I wasn't talking too long. Right. Cause you know me, I can get on a roll. So next big thing, just published Tuesday last week, on the Bureau's public website, director put out on Tuesday the 21st, a new article regarding FSA and BOP updates classification, classification practices. And it's labeled a win for staff and for prison reform. So from the staff side, this just makes for, again, better planning purposes.
Yes.
The same problem that we saw with FSA in terms of when to prepare a halfway house packet, this new change is embracing using those FSA dates, those conditional dates, for designation and classification purposes. What does that mean? So one of the things on a custody classification, one of the scoring elements is percentage of time served.
Right.
Less than 25%, 25 to 75, 75 to 90, and above 90%. Let's go back to the example I used of the person who, between his early release time and his pre-release time, has just shy of 4 years of FSA time. The Bureau, up until this announcement, again, did calculations based on earned credit. So if we've done all of the math and we figured out based on the conditional release date that this is when you're going to be eligible for community-based placement, non-secure placement.
Not projected, but earned.
They strictly looked right now, up until this change, only looked at what was earned. So, excuse me, I am so sorry. What they talk about here is use of that conditional placement date. Now, for folks who don't have a conditional placement date because their sentence isn't long enough, they're using that conditional release date. Essentially, what is the date that you are eligible to not be in secure confinement? That's what they're looking at. So for those guys, and you know, we've talked about it before, security level and risk level is two different things. But if I am now considering if I'm low risk, but I'm sitting in a medium or a high, because I've got a lot of time to do. Instead of just looking at my current release date, which is still changing month to month, they're now going to look at all of that conditional time and say, okay, when we calculate your percentage of time served, we're going to take this into account, which means your amount of time remaining to serve in secure custody is now lower, which means your percent of time served is higher. That positively impacts your custody classification. That can be the difference in sitting in a medium and getting to move to a low.
Absolutely.
Or sitting in a penitentiary and moving to a medium.
Yeah.
Also, separate from just the scoring element, is within the classification instrument is our public safety factors. One of the public safety factors is sentence length. If they are now taking into account your 3 or 4 years of FSA time, that conditional time, and they're saying, okay, this is when he's going to be able to leave secure confinement. And instead of him being 13 years from release and therefore has to stay in a low because he still has a public safety factor because he has more than 10 years remaining to serve, with his FSA time, he drops below 10 years. Now he's eligible for camp placement. Whenever you move down in security level, you have an opportunity to be closer to home. We have more camps than we have lows. You know, we have more lows than we have mediums.
So that PSF will then get dropped.
The PSF then drops because we're now not looking at your current release date. We're looking at that date of that conditional placement. When are you going to leave and go to the community? Really big news. And I know it. We've gotten a lot of emails and calls and comments on the Facebook page about how's this going to help Halfway House? It doesn't. It's not about Halfway House. It's not about home confinement. But it is big news for those individuals at the more secure facilities. Right. And they're at the more secure facilities because of their length of time remaining to serve.
And folks,
this is an opportunity to get them to come down, to be able to move closer to home. It's just a really good thing.
And these folks were otherwise kind of forgotten about because they were, you know, medium or higher in a medium or a penitentiary. But now they have a little bit of skin in the game with these new changes. They can start to kind of keep track and forecast some stuff. And I think it's really good to get
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. You know, we talked about in the one article we published that currently as FSA is designed, 65% of the population doesn't benefit from it, right? There's a percentage, a decent percent of those are FSA ineligible because of their offense. But then there's this other percent who are eligible to earn, are earning credit, but they don't have access to it. This is one more thing to say, you know what? Okay, maybe you are still 15, 20 years from release, but if you can just do what you need to do to bring those down, to bring those points down, programming or going to the warden for an exception. You know, for guys sitting in our penitentiary, in the penitentiaries and the mediums, if you've done RDAP, if you've done challenge, if you've done some of those other residential programs, and you've successfully completed it and you're maintaining clear conduct and you're doing all the things you need to do, but your points just haven't moved enough yet. Right. You can make that request to the warden and get that exception approved.
We're probably going to get more and more clients here as time goes on that have these kind of 2030, 2031, or what, but they've done a boatload of time, you know, and then they,
absolutely.
You know, they get in that earning status and like, oh my gosh, I did, you know,
Katie barred the doors.
I'm like, hey, I don't think you need our services. And I'm like, hold on a minute. How much time? I started doing the math in my head. Like, yeah, they're going to be a 2027.
It racks up fast.
Yeah.
You know, again, we've been talking about, and again, if I could get the ear of someone who is in a position and is in a position to make changes, Congress, Senate, but you got to get your act together and get the government open again, is why aren't we disincentivizing? Why aren't we incentivizing these guys at the media, at medium risk and high risk that are trying, you know? Yeah. We've seen cases, you know, they were hell on wheels for the first 35 years of their life. You rack up those community hit, those criminal history points, coupled with an offense, coupled with being under 50, like, you got a lot of points. And if all you can do is wait for your birthday so you can come down in the point structure, because age is heavily weighted. Crime is a young man's game, as they say. You know, that's discouraging. Yeah. And, you know, I know there's a lot, the focus, you know, is on nonviolent offenders, but
4 minutes, 4 minutes. Oh,
okay. We'll talk about that. Like, I'll get off my soapbox. I just think there needs to be more reform.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on other episodes. And
absolutely.
But this is all, folks, this is a step in a positive direction. It's a step in the right direction. And it as usual, it's going to take a little while for everybody to figure out these changes and whatever else. And then there'll be more changes, as you know. Right. It just seems like
and we talk about the public safety factors and percentage of time served and how that's calculated in our book. Yep. Unlocking Federal Designation and Custody, Federal Prison Designation and Custody Classification, the Green Book. It's obviously not going to cover this because this is brand new, but we do explain how those two factors, and once you know how those work, then the impact of this is obvious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good. That was awesome. What a great show today. Just flew by, didn't it, everybody? Just flew by. You want some more, don't you? Well, there's always next week and the week after, God willing, you know. So thanks for coming out. Thanks for listening to us. See our program on the LA Talk Radio site. We're also on Apple Podcast, Amazon Audible, and a few other podcast aggregators. Also, we have a YouTube channel, First Step Act YouTube channel, and we try to keep that kind of current with these shows as well. Our Facebook group, Early Release from Federal Prison First Step Act. And then Federal Prison Authority has a Facebook page in there as well that I've been trying to load these videos up, these shows in there as well. So multiple touch points. Remember, go to the BOP.gov site and try to find that video that's deeply embedded in the FSA stuff. We'll bring that out hopefully by the end of today. Yeah. And get that out to everybody on the Facebook group. So
inmate tab, FSA, First Step Act.
Yep. Okay. First Step Act. And then I'll get it on there, or Susan, you may, since I've got some stuff here, send me the link or whatever.
Yeah.
Once you find it, and then I'll get it and I'll,
I think you might have pinned it.
And then tag everybody.
I'll look.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, we'll do that. So, all right, absolutely. Everybody. Well, thanks. For stopping by. We'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody. Have a blessed week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.